We'll welcome everyone to the forum for the candidates for the Cobre Consolidated School District. As Raul said, I'm George Carr. I'm the consultant. Raul is the moderator, and Mr. Padilla is our sergeant at arms. This forum is being broadcast live over KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and it's being shown live on Facebook. It's being recorded and will be rebroadcast on KURU 89.1, and we'll be sending out announcements when it'll be rebroadcast. After soliciting input from the public, we've developed a list of questions. We have 12 questions. We will begin by having the candidates introduce themselves and make a few opening remarks. We'll then proceed to our questions. We have, like I said, we have a total of 12 questions. We will draw a question out of the box there. That's Raul will be doing that. And we'll give the first candidate 3 minutes to answer the question, and we'll give his or her opponent a minute to respond. At that point, the candidate who's asked the question will be given an opportunity to reply if he so desires. Those are the rules. We're looking forward to this. The New Mexico Association of Counties is strongly encouraging elected officials everywhere to increase the level of transparency in all government action. We hope that this will start the ball rolling in that kind of positive direction. And we're very grateful for the candidates who've chosen to attend today.
Thank you very much, George. Really appreciate your time, your effort. And once again, Marcus, for being the our tech guy. I would just like to start off with I do welcome all of you at this forum. It gives me great pleasure to be part of this. And I do want to thank George and Robert Padilla. I would just like to make a couple statements that I have actually interviewed hundreds and hundreds of guests, KURU 89.1 FM. I've also sat on a couple panels statewide with the media, with KUOT-TV, also with the Albuquerque Journal, and all other media sources. It gives me great pleasure to be in here, being a native here in Grant County. I have actually had the opportunity to be an elected official countywide, and one of my biggest things in my life in this county is knowing the people here, knowing the politics here in Grant County, and being elected 4 times countywide here in the state of, in the state of New Mexico, Grant County. So we're going to start off with my dear Serena Murillo on just tell us a little bit about yourself and why should we vote for you, okay?
Okay, good morning. Thank you all for attending. This is early for me on a Saturday morning. My name is Serena Esparza Murillo. I am a Grant County native. I'm the daughter of Rudy Murillo and Angelita Esparza. Thank you, Mom, for showing up. I have a Bachelor's of Science in History and a Master's of Arts in Teaching from Western New Mexico University. This is my 8th year of teaching. I'm a Level 3 teacher. I just passed my dossier. I taught 5 years in the Cobre District, and I do want to make a clarification. In the Silver City Daily Press, it said that I am a current Cobre teacher, but I left the Cobre District last year. I'm teaching at Aldo Leopold Charter School. I have a passion for education. One of the main reasons I became an educator is I wanted to improve our community, give our children all the tools that they need in order to succeed in life, whatever they choose to do. When I was at SNAL, which was my current school, I was involved with Builders Club, which was involved with the community projects. And being a teacher, I can bring a different perspective. I know what's going on in the classrooms right now. I know what teachers are struggling with. I have many colleagues still in, you know, that come to me and tell me their concerns. And I really have a love for our community, our children, and our families.
And if you would, please, can you say what the position and what district you're going to be running for? Just positions, okay.
What is the district one?
My name is Alvaro Lin. I was born in space out here in Santa Rita. And never realized that her dad was a real good friend of mine. We worked together with Boy Scouts many, many, many years ago. So yes, yeah, small world. Anyway, I have a bachelor's in teaching math. I've got a master's in teaching, and then I've got a master's in administration. I worked with the Deming Public Schools for 28 years, and at the same time, I was working for WNMU in Deming at the Learning Center for 20 years. So I've got a lot of experience teaching. Also, having an administrative degree, I understand what is happening on the board, especially when budget comes around. I understand that fairly well. So that's what I have to offer to the school district. My thing is, having been a teacher for so long, I believe that teachers are not utilized the way they should be. They have a lot of information, a lot of ideas, and unfortunately, many, many times, they don't listen to them. And this is one thing that I would like to do on the board is make sure that the teachers are heard, because they need to be. They have a lot of good ideas. So, I don't know. We shall see. And that's about it. My three boys went through the school system here. They went to Hurley Elementary, they went to Snell, and they graduated from COVID. So I know what goes on through. As a parent, I knew what was going on. As a teacher, I have a different perspective on it, but we shall see. But whatever one, she's running against me, so either way, you get a teacher on the school board, which is good.
Hello. My name is Gilbert Wadiana, and I'm a candidate. I'm an incumbent running for position two, and I appreciate all the effort that's gone to put this together. It's democracy only works when people show up. So what we can do in the ballot is the most important thing, and I hope everybody not only votes, but encourages everybody else to vote. I'm a native of Grant County. I went to COVID through the COVID school system. I graduated from Western with a degree in computer science and a minor in political science. And I worked in the mine for 10 years. I know the community very well. During that time, I was given the opportunity to attend Harvard University. And I went to the John F. Kennedy School of Government and received a master's degree in public administration. With that, I started working in California for about 18 years in different capacities for the Auditor General's Office and for Orange County, for also the Employment Development Department, and for which I helped write a grant application for the School to Career Project, which got $25 million of seed money to begin that project over there. Before I came back, I was working in the Marin County. I started in the administration office, and then I ended up as I got promoted to the part of being the assistant assessor recorder. My responsibility over budget oversight was that of over $100 million a year just for the Health and Human Services Department. I have a lot of experience in things that make me a good candidate for oversight of administration. And in that, in the past 4 years, I've had a very difficult time understanding why it is administration doesn't meet its responsibilities, doesn't involve teachers, doesn't involve parents, doesn't enjoy the participation of the community in the board meetings. That's the transparency, that's the accountability I want to push forward. We have an exciting time right now because there is a possibility of a change of administration in terms of who is the president of the board, who is the vice president, and who is clerk. With that change, we can be much more productive. We can have board meetings that are transparent. We can have accountability for board members. Two board members have spent somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 attending seminars and trainings, and yet we can't put an agenda together. I want to promote the transparency by encouraging the board to support this information being posted on the website. Every dollar that the board member spends should be accounted for and should be posted on the website. Salaries that we are paying should be posted on the website. Information about the board meetings should be available free. Recently, a gentleman from the public had to pay $21 for a board packet that had already been assembled and distributed to other members of the board. There is a great deal of secrecy. When we passed the budget, two of us voted against it. That would be Gabe and myself, because of the exorbitant salaries that are there. And I'll talk about that more in the future, during this conference. But I thank you for all the possibilities of making change. It's been hard now. I haven't really accounted to very much of a change, but this election can change that. And January 1st, we can start anew and we can be accountable. We can make the transparency of our expenditures for the bond money, hopefully the passage of SB9, transparent to us. Okay, have that transparent to us all. It is imperative for our kids. I don't want to see the bond issue lose, but I understand the frustration. But it's imperative for the kids that we push forward with keeping up with our grants.
And as you can see, we really have some really good candidates here for the Colby Consolidated Schools. And so what we're going to do, we're going to actually change a little bit of the venue because we were expecting all candidates to show up. So now that we only have three candidates, we're actually going to be asking the same question to all three, and they'll have 3 minutes to debate, 3 minutes to answer the question, and a minute to debate each and every one of you, okay? So in a way, that's pretty good because we're going to be answering the same question on that. So I'm going to let Serena pick the first number, and then we'll go to Mr. Olguin and then Mr. Guadiana. And what number that is?
Number 4.
We have number 4, and thanks to George with his index cards. That was done in about 1947, so thank you very much, George. And then we got the high tech over here with Marcus. It's just amazing. Okay, to start off with Serena, and then we'll go with Albert, and then we'll go with Gilbert. Does the Colbert Consolidated District need to retain existing teachers or attract new teachers? If so, what should be done to achieve these goals? And if you want me to repeat that question again, I can do that. So go ahead, Serena.
Can you leave it there?
Absolutely. Thank you very much on that. There you go.
Well, I have experience with this, just leaving the Colbert District. I think it's important to retain existing teachers. You gain so much experience and knowledge being in the classroom. And I left the Colbert District because I felt that I was not being heard by the administration. We are not being supported in our classroom. We are not being given the tools we need to teach our children. And I couldn't go another year feeling like I was failing my students because I was not being given the proper tools I needed in my classroom. So I think we need to retain our teachers. We have had a lot of retirements, and I know a few personally. They left for the same reasons I did. And when you have 20-some years of experience, that is a lot of experience going out the door. In regards to attracting new teachers, there are a lot of new teachers in our districts. And again, we need to support them. Their first years, you have a high turnover rate in the first 3 to 5 years of teaching. They need a lot of support and mentorship. And I know for me, I would have left my first year of teaching had it not been for my teacher next door, who encouraged me and gave me little tips every day on how to manage my classroom. And I think, you know, for example, in the Colbert District, a lot of the new teachers are going through the alternative licensure program, the LEAP program. They have to pass tests in order to become a licensed teacher. And a lot of them are struggling with the math test. And the district should provide study groups, tutoring sessions, something to support these teachers to pass those tests. And so
1 minute left.
I think those are, and just ultimately it boils down to respect. Respect our teachers, respect their professionalism in the classroom. Don't micromanage them, treat them like the professionals that they are. Thank you.
When I got my degree was in December, and so I didn't find a job, so I did some subbing from January through May, and Snell hired me to sub the last month. I was the fifth or the sixth substitute in 2 weeks. The sub before me quit during the day because somebody lit a fire in the room. So this, believe it or not, gave me a good experience, because when I started teaching, I was expecting fires in the room. It never happened. But the thing was that I had gained a lot of experience. And also another thing that happened to me, the last year that I taught, there was this one individual. He was teaching English, and the poor thing one time was crying and asking me for help. I said, well, isn't the principal going in to help you or anything? Anybody going in? He says, nobody's going in. I'm on my own. I said, well, if you come into my room, you can see how I teach and whatnot, and maybe you can pick up some points. Later that week, he didn't show up. He never showed up again. He lost his license because he quit teaching without letting anybody know. Do we need to help new teachers? Yes, we need to help them. We need to give them as much experience as we can. And I think one of the ways would be to, for future teachers to sub. Because when they're subbing, they're on their own. Nobody goes in to help them. They have to come to their own,
1 minute,
with their own tricks to be able to do it. So, and administrators, fellow teachers have to go in and help those teachers. Because if we don't help them, they disappear. I've known too many teachers that have thrown away 4 years of education because they couldn't handle the kids. So that's what we need to help new teachers. Sounds like bragging, but I had 5 kids that became math teachers just like me because they liked the way I taught. That might be another way of retaining, of getting new teachers, by being good teachers yourselves and getting kids to get an education and become just like you. Thank you.
Kobe does have a problem with staffing and teachers in a number of different categories, custodian and maintenance as well. The one part we don't have a problem with is staffing in administration, which has been overstaffed for quite some time. The staffing in teachers is at a very critical low. They are using instructional assistants that should be more involved in special education teaching a classroom. They have suffered the parts where they end up leaving because they go to teach the classroom for which they're not prepared to teach, and they get bombarded. When I started on the school board, I started because my children were in Baird Elementary School, and we saw the trouble, the behaviors just go on from 1 year to the other year to the other year. Now they're in the middle school, and they're still the same behaviors. It's difficult to be a teacher. They're not, their respect isn't there from administration. They have cases where they go to teach and there hasn't been a book purchased for the students. And then they change the curriculum in the middle of the year. Being a teacher in that kind of circumstance is very difficult. But what's even more difficult is they'll take new teachers that come in as they're going through their education program and put them in these classes where it's baptism by fire, without a lot of resources, without people there to mentor them. We lose prospective teachers, whether they're from here locally or whether they're from the outside, because of the lack of that. One of the things I've advocated during the budget is that we set up a budget for each individual school. We look at their performance and we make sure there are the assets there to address them, whether it's math interventionalists, whether it's English interventionalists, whether it is looking at the student-teacher ratio, having assistants there that are needed, having a firm presence of special education in problem solving. Those don't exist. We've never created a budget that reflects our needs. And we've never identified our needs. We've never looked at our classrooms and say, which ones are performing well and which ones are not, and what can we do to support them? Having teachers on the board will be an excellent addition to this. And so what we have is an opportunity to make this change, but teachers, we had a board meeting where they talked about a 20% exodus from the school, teachers and counselors. And now all of a sudden it went down to 10% because they had accidentally combined 2 years. I've asked for the names themselves. I doubt the credibility of the second number. 20% loss of students, of teachers, is a red flag. It's a serious red flag. And all of us are invested in fixing that.
Serena, would you like to make any comments? I think you've got a minute on anything that Albert or Gilbert has said?
No, I think it sounds like we all have a understanding of what needs to be done.
That sounds like the perfect world there, Serena and Albert.
Yeah.
You know what? It's amazing because, you know, we do have educators up here, and it seems like you guys are talking pretty much on the same page. So, Gilbert, would you mind getting another number here? Like the lottery, all right?
Wait a minute. Let me get my ticket.
Let me check your ticket on your lottery. And we do have the number 8. So, the number 8, and then we'll start off with Albert, then Gilbert, and then we'll have Serena. And I'm very passionate for that name, Serena, because that's my daughter's name, all right? So she gets a positive on that one, right? The number 8 question here in Cobra, for Cobra Consolidated School Board candidates. In your opinion, what were the good and the bad aspects to how the board handled the pandemic? In your opinion, what were the good and the bad aspects of the board handling the pandemic? So, let's roll again.
Unfortunately, I didn't have kids, grandkids. Well, I had grandkids going through the school, but I didn't have any personal, I didn't do anything personally to see what was happening. But I would talk to other teachers. I always talk to teachers. And what I feel that happened is that they were not fully prepared for what they were doing because they were not helped enough into what they were doing. I've heard them talk, and I understand that, in fact, I heard it Tuesday. It was teachers helping teachers, and it should have been administrators helping teachers. And so if administrators cannot help, step aside and let somebody else that can help them, help them. Because they needed help. This was totally new for everybody. But yet, when you go into uncharted territory, you don't know if you're doing right or wrong. You don't know if you're being successful. And evidently, they were not getting any feedback. I heard from a lot of parents, grandparents, that their kids were having trouble with the computers too. Was there somebody that could help those kids out? Because a lot of parents, grandparents are dinosaurs like myself that don't use a computer that much. So consequently, when you start having problems, first thing you do, slam it shut because you don't want to deal with it anymore. It's frustrating. And I can understand, and I work with computers, but the thing is, I can understand where people that don't work with computers, how they can feel. So they need help. They needed help. Parents needed help. Parents needed help. Kids needed help. Teachers needed help. Everybody needed help. And I'm not really sure that they got the help that they needed. So maybe, hopefully, next time, and I hope there's no next time, that we will be better prepared for something like this. We've got to be. We have to get those kids educated. Because they lost a lot last year, a lot, and that's not good.
Being on the board, I did get to see firsthand what it is we did, and I was taken aback from the very beginning. It was, and I don't want to downplay the challenge. The challenge was incredible. This is new ground, a lot of things that we weren't prepared for, but this is what I saw. We saw an expectation that the computers would be available in June. There was a late purchase order, but we were assured that we would get it in June. August came, they weren't here. September came, they weren't here. And it wasn't until I talked to Lieutenant Governor Morales that he got involved, and then they were here 3 weeks after that. There was protocols that were setting up for, like, cleaning the classrooms and who was going to do it. I asked, why aren't we having more custodians, and why don't we have more computer tech people? We don't need them, according to Toy Sepulveda, not the superintendent. Toy Sepulveda said, we will not hire any new custodians. We will do that by contract. Family member of the board has a contractor and has been providing some of those services. We're still short, to this day, having custodians enough to do that. Teachers are cleaning the classrooms. Teachers are wiping down the books and everything else that should be done by other people. They're cleaning the hallways. We have administrators and other staff cleaning the hallways as well. It continues today, and that's one of the frustrations, and that's why some of the reasons so many people have left. In addition, we had to build a hybrid program. And the first iteration of the plan for the hybrid program was have the COBRE teachers that are available to teach here in the classroom to teach there. And anybody, and we were going to send the students that wanted to do that remotely, especially after the hybrid was over, to the, there's an academy that is run by Deming and Hatch for students to participate in, and they'll do online services. And they're pretty good at doing them. Teachers here said, no, we don't want that to happen. We want to have students in our classrooms, and we want to have them in our remote learning as well. Teachers were what made it work. As Albert said, they made it work by getting together, figuring out the things, working together, teaching themselves computer programming. It wasn't just the parents and the students. A lot of our teachers weren't prepared to do this. We didn't hire any more computer staff. We didn't hire any more assistants to the teachers. They did it on their own. And I'm very proud to advocate for them, because it's something that they need to hear that is appreciated. And the other part, too, was we had cleaning supplies, hand wipes, bottled wipes, no foggers, no anything. Okay.
Okay, so the question asks how the board handled the pandemic, and I do want to, you know, we are still in a pandemic. We are not over it yet. I can speak to the board, the good, and how they oversee the superintendent, who oversees the administration. The good things that came out was that laptops were purchased for all students. Hotspots were provided to the students so that they could tune in for class assignments, classwork. And I do appreciate that the school board kept us closed. Nobody liked remote learning. It was tough. It was hard. But it was the safety of our staff, our families, our, you know, our students. And I do appreciate that it was kept closed. The things that could have used a little work, been improved on, we went into remote learning in March of 2020. When we returned August of 2020, it seemed like not much preparation had been done over the summer from our administration. We were expected to do remote learning, and we weren't told how to do it. Thank God for my colleagues, where we shared resources with each other, things they were doing in their remote learning, things that were working for them. Everything was, I would get online and learn how to use programs. And so we were doing it all on our own. And thank you to all my coworkers and colleagues who were there for me, and we helped each other get through that. When we went back in April, we had a reentry plan. And I want to say it was lip service. There was all these good things listed that were going to be done. I did not see it when I was in the classroom. I had to purchase my own cleaning wipes, because when I asked for them, they said there was a shortage across the country and they could not find them. I went to Walmart and I bought them for my classroom. I shouldn't have to do that. But, you know, teachers, we always spend our own money in our classroom. So, and like they said, no custodians. Still, this year, there were no custodians. Teachers are cleaning their own classrooms. That is unacceptable. That is not safe for teachers. It is not safe for students. That needs to change. Thank you.
Does anybody have any rebuttal or anything you guys like to add? You guys got a minute, each and every one of you?
I would like to use the last thought that I have. And I do thank Serena for pointing out that the closure of the schools was a great thing that happened. And I think people are benefited from that. But it was a shock in terms of its application. What I wanted to add, what I was going to close out, is that the supplies that were being purchased were all hand-on type things. There's foggers that were available. And after suggesting that and being turned down a couple of times, finally the board acquiesced, the administration acquiesced, and said, yes, we're going to buy two. We're going to buy two foggers for the entire district, and we're going to store them in the administration office so that anybody needs them can come and check them out. Can you imagine working in that environment? And that's the current superintendent at this point that said that. That can't go on. Those things are not that expensive. They do a ton of work a lot faster than an individual can. And if we don't respect our teachers' time, we don't respect our students' safety, they don't need to be there.
Thank you very much. And I would just like to add something on the remote learning and so on. You know, we're in a remote area. I did sit on the board of directors of New Mexico Counties, and I think one of the main things is broadband. And it is very important that we actually, you know, contact our legislatures, contact them, because it is really important. We're pretty much left out on the rural areas. But you know what? I'm so glad you guys brought that up, especially in the remote learning, because we really need broadband, really broadband here in the state, here in Grant County, in the southern part. So that was very good, you guys. That was very good. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Olguin, I feel like the price is right here, you know. Come on down. And the next question is the number three. In your opinion, what is the proper way for the board to look for a new superintendent? What a good question. Once again, in your opinion, what is the proper way for a board to look for a new superintendent? We'll start with Mr. Guayana, then Serena, and Mr. Olguin. So go ahead there, Gilbert.
Thank you. We've already gone that route. We've looked at the interim superintendent, for which we had 60 days notice from the previous superintendent that he was leaving. There was no announcement made, no effort to recruit. There was no solicitation of any kind until the week before he was to leave. And by law, we're required to have one. So at the last week, there was a solicitation for applications. There was only two that applied, one that was received with pretty rudely, from what he tells me. And we now have an interim superintendent. That wasn't a proper way to go about that. Now we're in the part of looking for the permanent superintendent. And Mr. Sepulveda has proposed that we use the State School Board Association to do that solicitation. He didn't ask any of the other board members. He put it on the agenda, brought them in to make a presentation, and expected it to be approved then. I wasn't at that meeting, but I was very grateful that Gabe Holguin was at that meeting, and he stood up against that and said, hey, what's going on? And why are we doing this now without doing any other work to predate that? And that was held off. For the next two meetings, Mr. Sepulveda continued to advocate that one sole process. Finally, we have a solicitation that just went out, I think, last week. And now we have a schedule for that in terms of what to do with that, in terms of getting the solicitations. But the solicitations, we had a difficult time getting the scope of work. The scope of work is in something that I believe that we should have is public participation. I advocated for a public committee. That finally got added on, but there's nothing else to say that the public committee will have any input on what it is or any recommendations to the board. That was taken off, and that was taken off behind closed doors. Troy and Frank will not discuss controversial issues like that in front of live board meetings. So they had the secretary remove that, and I bombarded her with questions that really were like, why did this occur outside of open session? And Choi and Frank were quiet the entire time. Well, let's go ahead and vote on it. That's how the schools run. It's not run in open session. We need public participation in the selection of the superintendent. We need to have them grounded so that there is an awareness of all the challenges that are occurring now. We need to make sure that bringing people to the table with the highest qualifications gets done. Administration does not hire by soliciting participants. We've had three positions, high-level positions, that have been filled simply by appointment, not by advertising, and not by qualifications. Thank you.
Go ahead, Serena.
So, not being on a school board, I am not sure how a school superintendent is usually chosen. I have been watching the board meetings for the past year, and I do know that things keep getting pushed back because of clerical errors. The agendas aren't right. The meetings aren't right. And then it gets pushed on to the next meeting and the next meeting and the next meeting. I understand that selecting a new superintendent would be time consuming, but I think you do need to weigh that with the price of hiring a consultating business. I think the stakeholders need to be involved with the selection of the superintendent. Teachers, not handpicked by the administration, but it should be open to all teachers who want to be there, family members, parents, students. Students should be involved in what do they want from their superintendent? What do they expect from their superintendent? So I'm not sure of the proper way to go about looking for a new superintendent, but I think it's been pushed back for a very long time, and I think it just the ball needs to get rolling, and it needs to get done. Thank you.
Okay, I was on the board the last time when we hired a superintendent. We hired Anna. I can't remember her last name. And I believe I was there when we hired Holder. And the thing is, there's a lot of things that you look for in a superintendent. And what I have come away with is the fact that it all depends on how you interview. If you interview well, you can be the devil in disguise. And if you interview well, you will be admitted to heaven. It's unbelievable. But it's scary because I've seen it several times that people that have been hired should never have been hired. But because they interviewed well, they were hired. You've got to be very, very careful as to what their intentions are. Also, another thing I firmly believe, we should not hire a superintendent that has retired in another district or another state. Because to me, they're only coming here to put money in their pocket. That's all they're doing. They really don't really care about the school. I've seen it twice. So, you know, and another thing, we should have the ability to ask questions from that district that they left from, because a lot of them were kicked out because they did some very wrong things, but they come here, and a lot of places do not allow, a lot of lawyers do not allow you to ask questions on that previous district. And that's wrong, because we need to know what kind of individual that individual coming in is like. And we should not, like I said, no retirees anymore. No, we need somebody that gives a damn. And I hate to use that word, but that's the way it is. Because I've seen it. I think the previous one didn't really care too much about what was going on in the school district. So let's get somebody that cares. Thank you.
Does anybody have a comment or rebuttal or anything you would like to say? Go ahead, Serena.
Well, I would just like to follow up on what Mr. Holguin said about looking into their past. A few years ago, the Silver Consolidated School District hired someone who, if they had done a simple Google search, they would have found news articles about that person, and maybe that would have made them realize that this person probably wasn't the best fit for the Silver Schools. Also, I think picking the superintendent is probably the most important job the school board will do, because that superintendent will set the culture of the district. And I think right now the Cobre School District, there's a very low morale among teachers and staff, and I think there needs to, and it starts from the top down, and I think it's really important that the superintendent will work to improve that. Thank you.
You know, it's quite interesting that, you know, we have all these districts, we have all these schools in the city of New Mexico, and the people that are hurting are actually our kids, our students, and it's really sad because that's our future, that's our education, that's who's going to pick up the ball and carry off with it. But I just got to hand to all teachers, you got the hardest job in the world. And I'm letting you know that right now. That is the hardest job in the world. We're doing very good on time. And candidates, are you okay for another question? Were you guys okay with that?
Absolutely.
Gilbert?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I'm going to pick it, all right? And I'll be the lottery winner today. And honestly, I am, because listening to you guys, thank you very much. And thank you very much for not only the audience, but you guys participating. And so, George, it's either the 9 or 6. What do I use? Okay, thank you so much. And you see, I had to pick that one, you know? So I'm going to do the number 9 for the candidates. Do you have an opinion about the Public Education Department proposing changes to the curriculum? Do you have any opinions about the Public Education Department proposing to change the historical curriculum? Thank you very much. See, I had to go to school and see with Serena. So starting off with Serena, then Mr. Olguin and Gilbert, would that be okay?
So the New Mexico Department of Education is revising the social studies standards for our state, which are long overdue. Standards should be reviewed every few years. I think the last time they were revamped was in 2009. And because of the Yazzie Martinez decision, the standards from a podcast I heard, they are going to try to address these inequities that need to be fixed. And so I haven't looked over all of the proposed changes to the curriculum. It is available in draft form on the PED website, and it is open right now for public input until November something. You can, you know, tell the PED how you feel about the curriculum changes. And they really use the current curriculum standards, and they're building off of that. And so I think it's a long needed change. And of course, because I teach social studies, I will have to look into them more. But I think it is important that when those changes come next fall and teachers are expected to implement it in the classroom, that they are given the correct textbooks and curriculums to implement it. You cannot have old curriculums to implement new standards.
I've been reading a lot about that in the news, and you know, I don't know what the problem is, because I remember when I learned history, I remember about the Jim Crow days. It was taught to us, but evidently a lot of people want to sweep it underneath the carpet like it never existed. I heard in Texas, they are telling the history teachers to find that they can talk about the Holocaust, but they have to have an alternative view to it. How can you have an alternative view to that abomination that happened? You know, there's no way that you can find something good about it. But I think and that we should have books that teach the way it was, not clean it up. Not nothing. I mean, if we did something wrong, I remember reading about massacres, Indian massacres in my history books. I mean, I remember a lot of that stuff about slavery. There was nothing, you know, we learned. We learned about it. The more we learn, the more we know about what's happening in the world. But the thing is, if you keep hiding it, it's not going to happen. You know, one thing that scared me, and this is goes not just, this wasn't history, it was, I don't know what it was, biology, I think it was in science. In Texas again, when Perry was there, he made sure that the science books did not teach. He wanted them to teach the fundamentalist Bible teachings that said that the earth was created a couple of thousand years ago. If you follow the Bible backwards, the earth is something like 30,000 years old. And I think this is wrong, because science tells us that the earth is what? 3 billion years old? So, you know, don't change it. Leave it the way it's supposed to be, the way it really happened. And I would be happy with that. And I think the rest of us would too. We just want the truth.
I remember my feelings when I went from Cobre and went to the military and then came back and started going to Western. And I was very blessed to have a political science teacher by the name of Dr. Arthur Martinez. And in his class, one prevailing thought took my concentration was, what the heck did we learn in high school? When I got there and I started reading about the U.S. interventions in Central America, in Africa, and in South America, it was perplexing. It was like, you know, I didn't know. But yes, and now it has come where the CIA has released a number of volumes of documents that verify all these things that we were being taught in college, but we're not being taught in high school. If it's done to protect us because we're young and maybe too impressionable, that's the wrong reason. It is exactly what we say here collectively is we need to know, we should apply a litmus test to our curriculum. Is it true? Yes or no. And what we're learning, a lot of stuff we know is not true. We know manifest destiny didn't happen where God came down and told our forefathers, to expand and grow in this country. We know that Christopher Columbus did not come with the best intentions at all, and nor did he treat the people here with any dignity. This was not a matter of discovering a continent. It was a matter of overthrowing a country. It was a matter of conquering a continent. We need to teach these, because this goes on now. Native Americans have circumstances where they're second-class citizens in the land that they occupied for so many years before us. And it still continues. The Yazzie decision that was made is one that was already passed through courts. And the court said that the state is responsible for doing these things, including funding the education system in reservations adequately. They don't have a tax base. There needs to be a change to the formula. And when you have education systems that built on tax, that are dependent on tax bases, that means poor communities will have poor schools, rich communities will have rich schools, or better schools anyway. There's a lot of things that need to change. There's a lot of directions the public education department needs to go. And it should be one that is the litmus test solely be that of, is it true? And is it fair?
Each and every one of you have another minute to make a comment on that. Is everybody okay, or would you like to add to it?
I'm good.
Here's the final question. And we're going to start with Serena, then Mr. Olguin, and Guariana, you're last. You know, qualify yourself, okay, on why you're going to be elected. Will you comment to meetings on the order maintained to the respect between board members and their presence? What I mean by that is, I've sat in many boards. I've sat in very many commissioners' meetings. I've actually testified as an expert witness. And how you address your legislatures, your chairmen, your vice chairmen, the respect, that's what I'd like to hear from him. Thank you very much.
Oh, I think when you have any meeting, respect and professionalism is always expected. The way you speak to each other should always be as respectful as possible. And of course, we all make mistakes. But I think when you're called out on that mistake, you should take responsibility. Take accountability that maybe you didn't handle that as well as you should have. as I've watched the school board meetings for the past year, Robert Rules of Order, they call for certain things to be said at certain times. And if things are getting out of hand or they're inappropriate, it's up to the president to, call it out and say that's not appropriate for right now. And it's their job to maintain the professionalism of the meeting. So I think that there's room for improvement in how the board members speak to each other. There's been some board meetings I've watched, and the way that questions were answered to each other was mind-blowing, the way they spoke to each other. And I think some training in Robert's Rules of Order, and I think that would help the board.
Respect is not just given out. Respect has to be earned. And for you to be respected, you've got to be an honest individual, no matter what. Because if you're dishonest in any way, in the smallest amount of your life, you will not be respected. You have to be an honorable individual. If individuals are doing wrong, there's no way they can treat others with respect, because they don't have it in them. I can control only myself. I cannot control others. I cannot control you people and tell you have to do this or that. No, but I can do it. I can show other people's respect until they give me a reason not to respect them. And the last time I was on the board, it was not too bad. We were able to talk about kids, and that was good. But I've been listening in on the present board, and I don't know. It's going to be a little bit different if I make it. But the thing is that that respect is going to have to be earned by every individual on that board. It's not just going to be given, especially from me. Thank you.
The question, as it's posed, is one that fundamentally says, yes, we should be respecting each other. I think the dynamics that Mr. Guggen talked about are exceptions to that rule. Since I've been on the board, I started out very quietly, and even my first simple request, because we've been approving purchases forever, and we've been approving them after they've been done forever. And my first request was, can we at least, why aren't we doing them before they happen the way we're supposed to? And then if we're going to do them afterwards, can we at least get an attestation, which means that or the superintendent and the finance director certify that these things have been done appropriately. That didn't go. When we have a board that has responsibilities of doing a strategic plan, keeping policies revised, doing facility assessments, and doesn't do them, ignores that. We don't have a strategic plan to have a superintendent to come in and lead us in the direction we want to go. We don't review curriculum to see if it's meeting the needs of what we want to do. Look at our grounds. And I talked to Mr. Stevens about this, and he was very concerned about Hurley. But there's Santa Clara, there's that going on too in San Lorenzo, and the baseball fields, none of that. I brought that up at the last board, even as recent as the last board meeting. And the concern was that we're not going to hire any more staff, we're going to contract it out. We're asking for the support of SB 9, where we'll get the continuation of the funds, the 2% mill levy. We don't have the grounds the way they're supposed to look with the money that we're already getting from the levy. For people to vote for the levy and see the grounds the way they are is to have faith on the school district. And it didn't pass last February because there's no faith on the school district that these things are going to be done. Unfortunately, I come to you now, not unfortunately, but realistically, I come to you now saying, please pass the bill. Because that'll give us the chance to make sure that it's accountable and the kids don't suffer from that happening. The grounds don't stay ignored. If we don't have the funding to do that, we can't catch up. And right now they're saying we're going to do this when we have the money right now. It's wrong. You can't be a respectful board member and say that when you go into the classroom and see the teachers being put through what they're doing, see the behaviors go from class to class to class. And if you're respectful, I should say respectful. I don't think I've been disrespectful. I've just been honest, brutally honest. And that's hard for some people to take. But I would expect that if it is that this school board changes with these three positions in terms of having a new administration, being able to elect a new president of the board, a new vice president particularly, then if I sit in any one of those positions, I welcome somebody to be brutally honest with what I have to say. 3 minutes, sorry.
Thank you very much. And that concludes our forum for the Cobre Consolidated Schools with these wonderful candidates. Once again, how impressed I am with their answers and thank the public for the questions. And I would just like to bring up that the last day of early voting is going to be the 30th of October in the Baird Community Center, also in the County Clerk's Office. And election day is November 7th of 2021 from 7 a.m. until 7 p.m. And once again, I really, really want to thank the candidates for coming up. Your honesty, your professionalism, and no matter how you look at it, Cobre Consolidated School is going to have some really good board members, let me just say. I do want to thank KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico, with Marcus, our tech guy, George Carr. And George, would you like to say a few words? Okay. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, and once again, if you have any questions about voting or anything, contact your county clerk's office, okay? And they do have a number, it's 575-574-0042, or you can get on the website, grantcountynm.gov. And then go ahead and key it up on the clerk's office. Excuse me?
Can we have one left here?
Absolutely. Would that be okay, George? Thank you very much there.
Okay, so I just want to thank you all for showing up today. And if you're watching on Facebook, thank you for being concerned about our children's education. They are our future. And I think even if you don't have children in the schools, I think it's important that you're aware of what's going on in the classrooms. Thank you again to Mr. Padilla and everybody who put this together. I can be reached if you have questions for me. My cell phone number is 575-912-1998, and I can give that to you after this. And my email is missserenamurillo@gmail.com. And like Mr. Valiana said, I am open to hearing what you have to say. And I think, you know, being questioned is always important. You should always, always question what's going on. And it should be received in a positive manner for those who are being questioned. I think it's been shown that when someone's being held accountable, they take defense to it. And I think we need to grow and move away from that. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for showing up and showing concern for our kids. The only thing I have is go out and vote. I don't care if you vote for me, vote for her. It doesn't matter. I won't get hurt either way. But the thing is, go out and vote. You know, that right is being slowly eroded away from you. If you've seen a lot of states that are cutting their, especially minorities, they cut their voting rights. So you're one of the last that's going to be able to vote the way it should be. So go out and vote. And like I say, for her, for me, doesn't matter. But just vote for one of us. Go out and vote. Get your family to go out and vote. Get your friends. Everybody, get them out to vote. We need that. We need that concern. Thank you.
Thank you for putting this together. It's a lot of work. And being that it's going to be rebroadcasted and people have the opportunity to hear this is noteworthy. And I thank you very much for that. And I thank you for attending. One of the things we didn't get to that I wanted to talk about a little bit had to do with the salaries that are being paid in administration. I asked for a spreadsheet of those salaries, and I wanted the salaries plus the stipends, and they gave me the salaries plus expenses. I don't know exactly what expenses entail. But for superintendent, it's $124,000a year plus another $34,900 for expenses. And for the assistant, it's $107,000 a year with $30,161 for expenses. Both of those total up respectively with $175,000 and $151,000. Other positions within administration, there are seven positions that pay over $100,000 in administration. This money has to come from somewhere. It wasn't there before. For instance, our previous finance director, Frank Ryan, was getting paid $79,000 a year. After 30 years, we have a new, we have Terry Holguin, who's been there now for three and a half years. She's getting $101,000. We have a number of different positions. We have one that's principal of, at Central Elementary School, where the previous principal was getting, I believe, $80,000, she's getting more closer to $100,000. Salaries are being based on whatever it is. And these aren't even new people. I mean, these aren't even people that have come with years of experience in terms of the positions that they're in now. That comes from the budget that should be going to the kids, that should be going to the grounds, that should be going to the teachers. Teachers do buy supplies, a lot of supplies. Even the ones students don't like the hand cleaner that they get because it stinks, and so the teachers end up getting some things like that. There's no consultation. That's not there. I thank everybody for giving me the opportunity to be there for years. I'm even more committed to this, given that the opportunity to actually affect change is upon us. But if we don't have your vote, if we don't have a change in the presidency and the vice presidency of the board, there will be no change. There will be no change. They don't. When people have come up to speak from the public, their general response is, okay, we'll take that under advisement. That's all. That's absolutely all. In other words, and it's, I get that too. I get you're only one vote. And yet they want to have harmony. Yet they want to have a school district that works. It is a matter of earning respect, and I thank you very much for bringing that up. And I give them the respect that they're due, and I do it in a way that is not. One of my mentors was Greg Mesa. I don't do it his way, but I do speak up, and I look forward to the opportunity of I'm excited. I'm excited that there's a potential for change. I'm excited that we're going to support teachers, that kids are going to get the education that they've come here for, that the grounds are going to look like we care. Those are the things that can happen in this election. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and that concludes our morning, going into the afternoon. And the only thing I want to say, please go out to vote. It's the most important thing right now. And once again, we're the ones that can make that decision. So thank you very much, and I appreciate the broadcast for KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico, also streaming at gmcr.org. Everybody have a wonderful day, and thank you for spending your Saturday this morning. Thank you very much.